Hello, Blakel learners. Welcome to the Weekly Pulse Show. My name is Tobias Sika. I'm a fourth-year Bishop's graduating student doing a double major in political science and German as a foreign language, and I will be your host for this show. This week, I have the great pleasure of interviewing Dr. Trixie Uglund on Nobel Prizes and Scandinavian politics. Dr. Trixie Uglund is professor at Bishop's University. He is educated at University of Oslo and Queen's University of Belfast with a PhD in political science from the University of Oslo. His research and teaching interests lie in the fields of comparative politics and comparative public policy, with a focus on European and Scandinavian politics and transatlantic relations. His most recent books include Jean Monnet and Canada, Early Travels and the Idea of European Unity, issued in 2011, and Policy Learning from Canada, Reforming Scandinavian Immigration and Integration Policies, issued in 2018, both published by the University of Toronto Press. Dr. Uglund is currently in his third term as chair of the Department of Politics and International Studies at Bishop's University, where he has been a faculty member since 2003. He also served as secretary general and vice principal of government relations and planning at Bishop's University from 2017 to 2022. Dr. Uglund, it's great to have you as my guest on this show.
Thank you very much. It's great to be with you here today.
The Nobel Prizes are worldwide known as being the top prizes one can win in their respective fields. Why do the Nobel Prizes have such stature and prestige?
This is a really good question, and there are several factors that may help us understand this. First of all, there are some important historical aspects. The Nobel Prize was established by Swedish Alfred Nobel in 1895. Alfred Nobel was already at that point a fairly well-known chemist, engineer and inventor. And his invention of dynamite in 1867 brought him significant fame and fortune. So the fact that the Nobel Prize is a very old prize and attached to a historic person can partly explain this prestige. However, I also think there are other factors to consider. The prizes are also supported by a very rigorous selection process where you have nominations by experts and thorough evaluations and extensive deliberations. And this has given the prize a reputation for integrity. It is not affected by commercial interests or favoritism, for instance. I also think that the Nobel Foundation has done an excellent job promoting the Nobel Prize through their annual Nobel ceremonies that are held annually on December 10th on the anniversary of Alfred Nobel's death. They are very often inviting very famous people to make introductions and cultural contributions. And finally, we should not forget that the prize money is substantial. Approximately $1 million US dollars. When the first Nobel Prize was awarded in 1901, the recipients received even more adjusted to today's value, so probably around several million US dollars. So these are some of the factors to consider.
And why are there Nobel Prizes for peace, literature, and economics, but no prizes for political science, psychology, or business?
Alfred Nobel's will established prizes in five areas: physics, chemistry, medicine, literature, and peace. And these reflected fields he believed were central to advancing human knowledge, culture, and general well-being of society. And it's important to note that economics was only added in 1968. The Nobel Prize in Economics was driven by the growing importance of economics as a discipline. And this can probably also explain why the fields that you were referring to are not included. Fields like political science, psychology, and business were less established as academic disciplines at the time. However, I must say that the absence of a Nobel Prize in mathematics is, however, a topic of much speculation and debate. But there is no definite explanation to this. But there are many interesting rumors. Nobel had a personal conflict with the famous Swedish mathematician Gösta Mittag Leffler, and there are rumors that they like the same woman. So this is, although it has not been proven, this is a rumor why there is no Nobel Prize in mathematics, for instance.
So speaking about these Nobel Prizes, they are awarded by specific institutions in Sweden and Norway. Physics, chemistry, medicine, literature, and economics are presented in Stockholm, Sweden, while the Peace Prize is presented in Oslo, Norway. Why did Alfred Nobel decide that Norway should award the Peace Prize?
We here have to remember that when Alfred Nobel wrote his will in 1895, Sweden and Norway were united under a single monarch. Norway became first independent after Nobel's death. It is not entirely clear why Alfred Nobel decided that the Peace Prize should be awarded in Norway and selected by a Norwegian committee, but there are some hypotheses. One is that it would create some distance from the politics and foreign policy of Stockholm and Sweden. Sweden was a European superpower, while Norway was a smaller and less imperialistic in their orientation. So that's one hypothesis. A second one is that we know that Alfred Nobel was very fond of an influential Norwegian writer and humanist at the time, namely Bjørnstjerne Bjørnson. There are some who believe that this could also explain why Alfred Nobel decided that the Peace Prize should be awarded in Oslo, Norway.
You are hearing the Weekly Paul Show with Tobias Sika. And this week, I'm interviewing Dr. Trygve Uglend on Nobel Prizes and Scandinavian politics. Who are some of the most famous persons to have received the Nobel Peace Prize? And are there people who should have received the Nobel Peace Prize but never got it?
This is also a very interesting question, and people will probably, you know, disagree and have different answers to this question. However, it's clear that many famous persons that have fought for peace have received the Nobel Peace Prize. Martin Luther King received it in 1964, for instance, Dalai Lama in 1989, and Nelson Mandela got it together with Frederick de Klerk in 1993. So many deserving recipients of the Nobel Peace Prize. However, Mahatma Gandhi is definitely the most glaring omission. The Nobel Committee has publicly expressed regret for not awarding the prize to Gandhi, acknowledging that his contribution to peace and non-violence were extraordinary. Why did not Gandhi receive it? Well, Gandhi's work was deeply intertwined with India's struggle for independence from British colonial rule, and awarding him the Peace Prize could have been perceived as taking a political stance against Britain. This is probably the most realistic and likely reason why Mahatma Gandhi never got the Nobel Peace Prize.
And in the same vein of question, are there any other Nobel Prize recipients that have surprised people?
There have been many surprises in the history of the Nobel Prize. And Winston Churchill was awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature in 1953, a decision that raised many people's eyebrows, given his primary role as a prime minister, politician, and a statesman, and not a literary figure. Churchill's Nobel Prize, therefore, was awarded not just for his literary works in the conventional sense, but also for his remarkable ability to shape public discourse, both in writing and in speech. The world was also very surprised when President Obama received the Nobel Peace Prize in 2009, only 9 months after he had entered office. He received the award for his efforts to strengthen international diplomacy and cooperation between people. but he had only been president for 9 months. Well, here we have to remember that according to Alfred Nobel and his will, the award should go to the person that had done the most to promote peace during the past year. So the Nobel Peace Prize is not necessarily a prize that you give for long time achievements or life achievements. So this is interesting.
This year's Nobel Prizes in Economics have been awarded to three economics professors, Darren Acemoglu and Simon Johnson, both at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, and James Robinson at the University of Chicago. The research of these three economists found that societies with a poor rule of law and institutions that exploit the population do not generate growth or change for the better. With the rise of far-right and populist parties entering government in Europe and North America, potentially resulting in rule of law and institutional norm backsliding, could we expect turbulent economic years ahead and a general economical downgrading for the West?
It's hard to be 100% certain on this answer, but there is definitely a statistical association between democracy and GDP per capita. And based on the findings of this year's Nobel Prize winners in economics, we could expect turbulent economic times given some of the political trends that we are observing at the moment. However, the Nobel Prizes are also used to send messages to world governments, and this is not new. And by awarding the prize to these this year's winners, the selection committee is perhaps trying to avoid this from happening by highlighting their findings and reminding people of the importance of rule of law and well-functioning democratic institutions.
You are hearing the Weekly Pulse Show with Tobias Sika, and this week I'm interviewing Dr. Trygve Uglend on Nobel Prizes and Scandinavian politics. So moving now on to Scandinavian politics, once one of the countries with the lowest crime rates in Europe, Sweden is now dealing with crippling violent crime rates, with more firearm homicides than anywhere else in Europe. A Swedish colleague of mine at Bishop's attributed these soaring crime rates to excessive leniency of criminal sentencing. Is that so? Why is Sweden riddled with violent delinquency?
Well, we have to remind ourselves that Sweden is still generally considered one of the safest countries in Europe and the world. But like any other nation, it faces social and criminal challenges that have evolved over time. And to understand why Sweden might experience some challenges right now, we can look at several factors. Lack of immigrant integration is one such factor. Sweden has been a major destination for refugees and migrants during the last two decades. And while Sweden has been praised for its humanitarian approach to migration, challenges in integrating newcomers have led to social tensions in several communities near the bigger cities. The foreign-born population has increased from about 10% to more than 20% in a very short time in Sweden. And this has created challenges, but I know that Swedish authorities are working very hard to do something with it. Another possible factor may be related to lack of police resources. Sweden's police force has faced criticism for being under-resourced in some areas, which can make it harder to respond effectively to gang violence or prevent crime in high-risk neighborhoods, very often near the largest cities. This is also related to the question that what we just talked about, namely immigrant integration. I am convinced that Sweden will find solutions to these challenges, but you are right. They are working very hard on that right now.
Since the start of the 2022 war in Ukraine, Norway has become Europe's largest supplier of natural gas. This Nordic country has been one of the founding members of the European Free Trade Agreement, EFTA, and a member of the European Economic Area, EEA, which ties them to the same freedoms and obligations under the European single market. Despite this very close, almost fraternal relationship with the EU, 73.6% of Norwegians would vote no in a referendum to join the European Union, according to the 2018 European Social Survey. How do Norwegians feel about the EU? Will they ever join the bloc?
Well, as a Norwegian-Canadian, I know a little bit about this issue, and it's true that Norway has had a difficult relationship with the European Union from the very start. Norway is the only country in Europe that has voted no to EU membership, and Norwegians have done it twice, in 1972 and 1994. It is a very sensitive issue, and both the campaigns in the 1970s and the 1990s were very disrupted the Norwegian society to a large extent. There are many people that are very much against membership and others that are pro-membership. Currently, there is not much support for joining, but things can change very fast. This happened with Finland and Sweden. They were also very much on the no side, but during an economic recession in the beginning of the 90s, it changed very quickly. And I think that the NATO-EU relationship is a factor that can lead to rapid changes. Norway is a founding member of NATO, but a non-member of the European Union. And it's an open question what will happen with NATO under a second term of President Donald Trump. If NATO should become less relevant in protecting Europe, the EU will probably become a more important actor when it comes to ensuring peace and security in Europe. Some Norwegian political parties have raised this dilemma, and if this turns out to be true, we might see a big shift towards more positive attitudes towards the European Union. This remains to be seen. Norway is still far from membership of the European Union, but if they should decide to join, I think they will be accepted very quickly.
Thank you very much, Dr. Uglin, for being the expert of this interview. Would you like to add anything else?
I just want to take this opportunity to thank you for the invitation. I have followed your radio shows, and you have done a great job bringing very topical issues to the listeners over these weeks. So thank you very much, Tobia.
This is it, folks. I hope you appreciated my political podcast today, and I am looking forward to having you for next week's show. Next week, I will be exclusively interviewing Aurélie Bonal, the EU's Deputy Ambassador to Canada, on the EU's Diplomatic Service in Canada and EU-Canada relations. If you have any questions or would like to submit ideas of topics to cover related to current political events, write to me at tck20@ubishops.ca. That is tsica20@ubishops.ca.